Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Latest on the stimulus talks, nurses strike, a paltry boost for Social Security recipients. And today on the show, Liz Shuler, Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, and Dave Wondolowski of the Cleveland, Ohio Building Trades. Good afternoon and welcome to the Wednesday, October 14th edition of America's Workforce. Don't forget, we're available on various platforms. So that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Also on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle. We have two guests on the show today, and I am very, very happy to report our first guest is Liz Shuler, who is the Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, the second highest position in the labor movement today. She's had that position for, my gosh, since 2009. She's going to talk about climbing up the ladder. She grew up in a union household. Her dad, Lance, was a power lineman, longtime member of IBEW Local 25 in Portland, Oregon, worked for GE. Her late mother, Joyce, worked as an estimator in the company's service and design department. Turns out a summer job in the payroll department at Pacific Gas and Electric during college revealed for Liz how the clerical workers who were not in the union didn't have the same bargaining power or respect on the job as their unionized counterparts. That got her going, and she didn't stop from there. Like I said, she went right up the ladder, and she now serves as chief financial officer for the Federation and oversees operations altogether. Incredible woman. Also plays an active role in community and allied organizations, serving on the boards of the National Women's Law Center, Institute for Women's Policy Research, AFL-CIO Housing Investment Trust, Alliance for Retired Americans, the Solidarity Center, Committee on Workers' Capital, and the Women's Committee of the International Trade Union Confederation. And we're going to talk about women in the trades. Obviously, she comes from the electrical workers. And you know, if you've been listening to this show, the big event that's happening this Saturday. And it's all about getting women involved in the trades, the Trades Women Build Nations Conference. And she is going to be one of the many speakers there this Saturday. And it's all online due to the pandemic. So Liz Shuler is going to be our first guest. Later in the show, we're going to be hearing from Dave Wondolowski, Executive Secretary of the Cleveland Building and Construction Trades Council, cbctc.org. Their Twitter handle is at CLEBCTC. Dave's going to talk about women in the trades as well. In fact, we're going to have Doreen Cannon on behalf of Plumbers Local 55 talking more about that on Friday's show. But Dave is also a member of the Board of Elections. He'll talk about voting. We're hearing all kinds of stories about how difficult it's been to vote and drop boxes and all the court cases that are going on, not just in this area, but around the country. And Dave's going to give us his assessment on how things are going in northeastern Ohio and in Ohio generally. So he'll be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, talks over a future potential COVID stimulus package have once again stalled after members of the House and Senate announced that there would not be much movement on a potential deal. Now, the Senate, as you know, has been focused on Judge Amy Coney Barrett's nomination hearings, prompting Senate Republicans to reject White House pushes to focus on making a stimulus package deal. So a little tug of war going on right here. Now, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, are expected to negotiate more this week to hammer out the difference in their offers. The difference is $0.4 trillion. Got that? $0.4 trillion. There's been compromise on behalf of the Democrats, not so much on the Republican side. Now, Mitch McConnell has come out saying that there's going to be a procedural vote on Monday. We'll see what happens there. Any finalized stimulus package vote is still not expected before the election, which is, what, 20 days away? Nurses at the Bacchus Hospital, this is in Norwich, Connecticut, began a two-day strike yesterday after negotiations failed on creating a new contract with the hospital. The hospital recently had 9 employees test positive for COVID-19, and cases were rising in Norwich and nearby locales. The nurses' chief demands: better wages and health insurance, as their wages are less than nearby hospitals. They also want better PPE, as they've been forced to reuse masks and equipment. That blows my mind. I still can't believe how many months we're into this pandemic, and people in the healthcare profession are reusing masks and gowns. Though representatives of the nurses are worried about patient care during the strike, they pointed to the weeks of holdouts, negotiations, and delays. They try to avoid having a strike. Just not happening. Meanwhile, today, a judge will hear the Boston Teachers Union's case seeking an injunction barring Boston Public Schools from requiring in-person instruction. The lawsuit was filed last week after Boston's COVID-19 infection rate rose to over 4%, which the union claims was supposed to trigger school closings. Now, the school claims that it's allowed to keep schools open if the Boston Public Health Commission says the schools are safe, which it did after the 4.1% positive rate announcement. The union says it has confirmed cases at 4 schools. Most of the students returning to the schools currently are high-need students, including students experiencing homelessness, slow learners, and special needs students. And the teachers criticized the school's previous reopening for lack of teacher input and the system's failure to make the results of a ventilation study public. Whoa, that'll be interesting once that eventually comes out. Social Security, here's your increase if you're a recipient for next year, 2021, 1.3%. That's it. 1.3%. That's the COLA, or better known as cost of living adjustments. Rich Fiesta, who we're going to hear from on the show this coming Friday, is executive director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, and he is not happy about this at all. This is a quote from Rich. The members of the Alliance are disappointed and angry that 64 million Social Security beneficiaries will receive a paltry 1.3% benefit increase for 2021. While any COLA is better than nothing, 1.3% is not nearly enough to keep up with the escalating costs of prescription drugs and other expenses seniors have to spend their money on. 29% of Americans report they are not taking a prescription their doctor prescribed due to the high cost. Rich goes on to say, the pandemic is also hitting many seniors hard. At least 16% of seniors who work have lost their job due to the pandemic, meaning Social Security is a larger portion of their income. He says there is a better way. To help seniors and strengthen Social Security, we need to protect and expand the program. We can modestly increase benefits by making the wealthiest Americans pay their fair share by removing the artificial earnings cap. Now, that would strengthen the Social Security Trust Fund and provide all retirees with increased benefits. Also, Congress should require future COLAs to be based on the CPIE, that is the Consumer Price Index for the elderly. That index would reflect health care and housing costs, things that seniors actually spend their money on, and will result in a fairer COLA. That's a statement from Rich Fiesta of the Alliance for Retired Americans. Again, 1.3%. That's it for all recipients, and there's a lot of them, 64 million, and that starts January 1. All right, we have to take a break. You are listening to America's Workforce. Coming up next, Liz Shuler, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. And don't forget, you're listening to America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget, we are available on various platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. We're also on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and our Twitter handle, you can follow us there, AWF Union Podcast as well. All right, let's go to line number one, and we have not had this lady on for a while. Shame on me. It's finally time to bring Liz Schuler back to the show. Liz is the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Always quote them on the show, AFLCIO.org. She's in charge of the financials. She is the highest ranking woman in the Labor Federation's history. Liz Schuler, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
Hey, Flash, it's so good to be on. It's been a while, as you said. So thanks for welcoming me back.
It's been a long, long time. I know we want to talk about the Trades Women Build Nations Conference. We're going to do that in the next segment, but I want to refamiliarize you with our listeners. And now you heard me say we are nationally podcast. The last time you and I had conversation, that was not the case. So got a lot of listeners right now. We want to get acquainted with you. I'm sure many of them know you already, but let's just refresh them all. I see you were a graduate or working at the University of Oregon. Well, you were going to school at the University of Oregon, and you were doing some organizing back then. Your dad, electrical workers. Let's start right there. Your family history of union activity. Go ahead, Liz.
Sure, absolutely. I'm glad you raised my father because he's actually been a huge influence on me in my life, still is. And he, went to high school also in Portland, Oregon, enlisted in the Marine Corps right out of high school, went to Vietnam, came back and was looking for a job. And so he went to the local utility company, and I think he was making less than a dollar an hour as a hole digger. If you can imagine, you know, back in the days where they were manually digging holes for power poles. And when he was able to prove himself and then apply to the line apprenticeship with the IBEW and Portland General Electric, it changed his life. It changed everything for our family. 'Cause as you probably hear quite often, right, we were able to have a decent wage coming into the house. We had health care. We had security. And that was back in the days when most electric utility companies were almost like families, right? Generations right. of people worked at one company. And so I worked there at one time. My mother worked there. My father worked there. And the whole industry went through a huge change when electricity deregulation came into play, and Enron then purchased our little sleepy utility in Portland, Oregon, and completely turned everyone's life upside down. And that's where the passion in me was ignited for organizing and trying to figure out how we beat back these big corporations who take advantage of workers and, you know, the greed that we see over and over again with big companies who really don't care about working people.
Mm-hmm. Now, in college, I was reading that you were involved in organizing some clerical workers. Talk to me about that part in your life.
So when I had worked at the electric utility company, I, you know, of course, got to know a lot of the clerical workers who were not organized into a union. The power line side, you know, the linemen were members of the IBEW along with all the other kind of physical plant and, you know, the jobs that are on that side of the house. But in terms of the headquarters in downtown Portland, there were a lot of clerical workers who said, hey, wait a second, you know, we see these guys getting a better deal. They have a voice on the job. We want that too. And so the organizing campaign started, and the local union knew that if we're organizing clerical workers who were essentially mostly female, they needed organizers who reflected the workers they were trying to organize, right? That's the first rule mm-hmm. of organizing. And
right.
So that's how I got involved in the campaign, is I had worked alongside these women. I obviously knew the IBEW and had a history with the IBEW through the work of my father. And so I signed up to work the campaign and then went to work for the local union after the campaign, because the company came at us with everything they had. It was a classic kind of union busting. You know, they were doing the captive audience meetings, and they one-on-ones with people to try to intimidate them. And so, unfortunately, the campaign failed, but we learned a lot in that campaign. And I think one of the rules going forward was, of course, to try to reflect the members you're trying to organize. And so that was how I ended up with playing a role at the local union.
Now, it's my understanding that all the organizers at that time were men, and here Liz Schuler comes to the fold.
Right. Well,
how did that go over?
You can imagine it's a power lineman's local. I don't know if you know any power linemen, but they're definitely a tough crowd at times.
Yeah.
But I was 23 years old, you know, kind of trying to get my experience under my belt at a young age, working in an environment with essentially no young people and no women. So it was definitely a quick education. And I say today that I could deal with Congress people. I could deal with CEOs. It's never going to be as tough as getting up and standing up in front of a crowd of power linemen. Right. So that to me was an education. And obviously it's ignited, as I said earlier, my passion for the work I do today, because I saw firsthand how people were treated when a corporate giant came in and took over our utility, ran it into the ground.
Yeah.
They then filed for bankruptcy, and people in my family, along with my union family, union members at our local, lost their pensions, their livelihoods, and it was just one of the most unjust things I'd ever seen or experienced that sticks with me today.
Oh, that happened so many times to American workers. It's so sad, so sad. And you know what? I fear for what's going to happen now with this pandemic. We've seen a slew of bankruptcies here in the last 4 to 5 months.
Right.
And yeah, there's a
whole
lot
industry.
Of hurt out there. Yeah. Yeah. Whole industries that will probably not come back. That's the scary part about that. Let's continue here to Proposition 226. A lot of people don't know what this is about. It's called Paycheck Protection Proposition that threatened a whole lot of political fundraising. Why don't you speak to that little bit, because I think we need to zero in on that point. And it's just another example of how the corporate community likes to come down on unions. Let's talk about, let me hear your point of view on that, Liz.
Wow, that's going back some time, Flash. I'm trying to dig through my memory banks here because that was in, I believe, 1998, if I recall. And it was an initiative on the California ballot that is a lot of similar to a lot of initiatives we see even today, which, you know, the forces that oppose unions like to try to figure out ways to chip away at their power and restrict their ability to finance the work they do. So it was called a paycheck. We call it a paycheck deception initiative, but it was trying to get authorization for political expenditures by every union member every year, I believe, was the nut of it. But it was essentially a tactic to say, you know what, you can't spend money on anything besides collective bargaining and its associated costs. And if you try to spend it on political, quote, political expenditures, like informing your members of what the impact would be of a person getting elected to office, or if you want to inform your members on the effects of a ballot initiative, that all of that cannot be financed using dues money. So that was an uphill climb because clearly it's a very complicated issue. And as you know, when something goes on the ballot, you don't have a lot of time to explain it unless you have a lot of money to purchase ads and try to educate the public. And so that was exactly what it was designed to do. So we went into that initiative with a 70% approval rating. We were looking to flip it to a majority no vote. We ended up flipping to the opposite, a 70% no vote, in a very short period of time, particularly among union members, because that was the audience we wanted to make sure we had first and then carry out to the public. So it was a tall order. We were successful, and then that actually opened the gate for a number of initiatives that then came at us, not only in California, but all across the country, looking to weaken the power of unions because they, you know, the powers that be don't like working people to have the power at the ballot.
Yeah, yeah. And imagine if you did not win that, you would see that all over. And I reference what happened 10 years ago with Scott Walker in Wisconsin when he attacked public sector workers. And then you saw it happen in Michigan. I mean, who would ever think Michigan would go right to work? And then it went to West Virginia. Kentucky, I believe, already had it. They tried it in Ohio, but we beat it back. We beat it back big time.
That's That was, but it's a divisive tactic, right? Like any way you can try to divide workers, pit them against each other, make it seem as though union members are, you know, some kind of privileged club that is separate and apart from working people broadly, which you know, we know is this idea of, you know, of this race to the bottom, right? That if we can take away rights and privileges or benefits from one set of workers and start chipping away at that, then before we know it, it's a race to the bottom.
Oh, I know. Liz, I can't tell you how many times somebody would talk to me and said, oh, you're a member of a union. Oh, it must be nice. You have high wages and good benefits. Well, come on. That's what everybody should have in America. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to spread the good news here. It's so unfortunate.
Up, right? Instead
yeah.
of tear them
yeah.
down, we should all have good health care. We should all have retirement security and good wages. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to me about rising to the AFL-CIO. I know you worked your way up with the IBEW and you were in charge of a lot of programs. And what was it? I believe it was 2009 you became Secretary of Treasury. How did that unfold for you?
Right. I worked at the local union for many years, as you said earlier, and then the IBEW came knocking at the headquarters in Washington, D.C. to say they needed a political legislative operative. So they then moved me to the international office. I took a position, an international representative position, in 1998, I'm sorry, you're testing my history here, 1998, and I started out right around the time Enron was filing for bankruptcy was when I actually went to D.C., which was the timing couldn't have been better in the sense that we were able to bring, you know, working people from Portland, Oregon to testify before Congress, you know, as they were looking into the financial practices of this corporate giant that basically took advantage of so many people. And so we were able to bring the real stories of working people to the Hill. And so that was around 1998. And I continued my work there in the political legislative department on, you know, hopefully, you know, the track record speaks for itself. We in the IBEW were able to defeat electricity deregulation, which was taking hold all across the country at that time, an experiment that started in California that, you know, they were looking to make electricity a competitive service, which if you can imagine, you know, we rely on electricity like we do water. I mean, it's a fundamental right that everyone right. needs to have access to. So we saw the handwriting on the wall with that and were able to kill the legislation nationally, along with, you know, a number of other initiatives we worked on for quite a few years. And then the president of the IBEW promoted me to chief of staff in 2004, which I then was overseeing the department I came from, along with 10, 11 other departments in the international headquarters. So I was acting as the right arm to then President Ed Hill, who many people know in the labor movement was quite a legend, a visionary, mm-hmm. Someone who, you know, was both practical and pragmatic, but also had big ideas of where he could take the union. So I was honored to work side by side with him in implementing that vision. And that's how I began to cross paths with Rich Trumka, who was Secretary Treasurer at the time. And when he was looking to run for president, he was looking for a running mate. And we put together a team. Arlene Holt Baker was Executive Vice President already at the time. And so we ran together as a ticket in 2009. And I guess, as they say, the rest is history.
There you go. Liz, I got to take a... You're getting all your dates right. I'm fine. I'm fine with that.
I was like, this is challenging my memory here. Yeah.
You're doing a great job. Doing a great job. You know what? I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Trades Women Build Nations Conference, which is going to, as you know, be online due to the pandemic. We'll do that more. Liz Schuler joining us on our live line, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Once again, you are listening to America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce.
The Food and Drug Administration has recently reported that the heartburn medication Zantac is linked to cancer. Zantac has been linked to a variety of cancers, which include bladder, colorectal, kidney, liver, pancreatic, and stomach. So if you or a loved one took Zantac and developed any of these types of cancer, you need to call Kelly and Ferraro, 216-575-0777. Let me repeat that number, 216-575-0777 for a free case review. You may be entitled to compensation from the drug manufacturer.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. By the way, when you get a chance, just sign up. Receive our shows on a regular basis. Give us a rating. We would appreciate a 5-star rating. Well, we got a 5-star guest on line number one, Liz Schuler. She's Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, position she's had for 11 years now. And I understand, too, I want to talk about the Trades Women Build Nations Conference, but in your role as Secretary Treasurer, you handle what the finances. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that, especially in this year of the pandemic and other duties. I'm sure you're very active. I know Rich Trumka, I see him all over the place. I imagine you're in the same fold, right?
Absolutely. We wear a lot of hats as officers of the AFL-CIO, and I am constitutionally responsible for the finances, yes, absolutely, and I take that duty very, very seriously. But I'm also minding a number of projects and initiatives in my portfolio. Certainly the future of work and technology and where work is going, and as we change and grow and innovate, we want to make sure that the labor movement has a voice in that, and ensuring that the technology benefits everyone, not just a handful of people mm-hmm. who are developing the technology. I also have been engaged quite deeply in the climate issues, primarily because of my background from the IBEW. The labor movement, I think, has a special role to play in that debate and making sure we have a clean energy economy, but also good high road, high wage jobs as we transition. I've also been tasked with retirement security, workforce development, and then one piece of the portfolio that I wake up every morning thinking about as a woman labor leader is women in our movement. And women are half the workforce. They're half the labor movement. In a couple of years, we'll officially be half the labor movement. We want to make sure that women see us as their movement, because I don't have to tell you there's a lot of stereotypes out there, right, about the labor movement. And I think we've been changing and growing, and we want to make sure our doors are wide open, wider than ever, to welcome in women, people of color, young people, kind of the new emerging majority, as they say, of the workforce, that we want to make sure the union movement is a movement for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, America is changing, and the unions need to reflect that. And they are. They're doing a good job. But you know this, Liz, everybody can do a better job. That's the important thing. Speaking of women, I want to get you come from the IBEW, and I want to talk about the Tradeswomen Build Nations Conference this year, a little different. Usually it's a 3-day event. It's going to be this Saturday, October 17th, virtually. Do you have a, number one, do you have a role in it? I would imagine you do. You said you wear many hats. Here's another one for you, right?
Indeed, yes. And I am sad that we have to go to a virtual format, because this is something I look forward to every year. I don't know if you've been to one of these conferences. If you haven't, put it on your calendar for next year, because it brings together nearly 2,000 tradeswomen. It is full of educational days and workshops and networking. It's one of the highest energy events I think I go to in a year. And it has grown, since its beginnings in 2002. It was just in California, and now it's gone national. So we find that it is a place where women connect. As you know, if you work in the trades, you, as a woman, are often, sometimes the only woman or one of the very few women on the job site. And so, there's some isolation that comes with that, right?
Sure.
And you want to be able to connect with other women to share similar experiences and strategies for, being successful on the job. And so I just am blown away by how much it's grown and how much power and energy is created when women, tradeswomen, come together. So this conference, of course, is going to look a little different. It's virtual. But it really shows that no matter what, we aren't going to let any barriers get in the way of us coming together and showing up for one another. So this year's theme is they have a workshop format around leaning in to create equal workplaces and an equal world, I think is how they've characterized their theme. So it's an ambitious goal, of course. It's not an easy one. But I think as we come together and we strategize together and build the kind of leadership skills and really network with each other, that's the way we build success.
Right. You probably know Gina Walsh. Gina
she's
the organizer for this event. She comes from the Insulators Union, and she told a story just the other day about how she wanted to get into the trades, and it was like, you know, all male dominated, much like yourself back with the IBEW when you're organizing. And they were like, are you kidding me? What you don't want to do this. You don't want to get involved. And finally, you know, she's a tough lady. She does not take no for an answer. She hung in there. Eventually she got in, and look at her today. She's organizing this event. So it's important.
She was a state senator as well up until recently, you know. So she was leading in the Missouri legislature, being a voice for working people there, along with, you know, the building trades, you know, the organization of 14 crafts. So I think, you know, she's worn many hats like we all do. But I think we all see that there's so much potential for growth for women in the trades. And this is a place where you can make a great living. You can essentially write your ticket, right? Because so many of the crafts are looking for women to join their ranks. And so we think that this is fertile ground, you know, great growth and organizing opportunity for the labor movement is to recruit more women into the trades and, you know, make sure that we are showing them that the labor movement is a path for them. And not only do we get them a good contract when they join, you know, a particular union and go to work, but we as a labor movement are fighting for their rights, you know, even beyond the job site. So whether that's, you know, against sexual harassment and fighting for affordable childcare and making sure that, you know, women are paid equally. Although I always say the best way to get equal pay as a woman is to join a union, because collective bargaining makes sure that we have a contract, that we have pay transparency, and that if you do a job, you are paid equally for that job, no matter if you're a man or a woman.
Got it. Boy, there's so much we can talk about. And, you know, the other part of this picture, too, is, you know, when Trump came in office, he talked about building and rebuilding the infrastructure. And it's sad that none of that was done. We had Sean McGarvey of the North America Building Trades on just recently talking about the fact that he dropped the ball on that. And you, coming from the electrical workers, think about the electrical infrastructure in America that needs attention right now, Liz. And then, I mean, you were talking about women in the trades. My God, the job opportunities could be endless if the parties got together and we had true leadership in Washington to move America forward. We've got millions of people that are unemployed right now. What a great opportunity, right?
Absolutely. And we have been calling for this for years. As you've said, the president made empty promises. We have just been, you know, shouting from the rooftops for years that the American infrastructure is at, I believe, a D+. That is not what a world-class country looks like. We need to be competitive in a global economy. And so if you think about every period of American prosperity back through time, it's been built on huge investments, right? Railroads, highway system, you know, electricity grid, water and sewage systems, even public education, I would argue, is an infrastructure investment. So the fact that this president has broken his promises has set us back. And he has basically gone with the same old playbook that we see over and over again with the Republicans, which, you know, is to cut taxes for the ultra rich, hope that it, quote, trickles down, right? That has never worked. We know it. It's not working now. So we are now doing everything we can to elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, which we know that they are going to build modern infrastructure, and they're going to be, you know, working people are going to be leading in these conversations and have a voice in the decision-making process. So it's obvious at this moment in time where we need to go.
Build from the ground up. Liz, you're
build
awesome. Thank you. Build back better. Liz,
that's
thank
great.
You so much for your time, your dedication to the labor movement. Let's do this more often. It's been a long time, and we've got a lot of work to do. Let's all get on this project together, okay?
Sounds like a deal. Thank you so much, Flash.
Thank you for joining us. Liz Schuler, Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. We're going to take a quick break. Dave Wondolowski of the Cleveland Building Trades coming up next. Once again, you're listening to America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. And when you get a chance, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And eventually give us a rating. We would appreciate a 5-star rating. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. You can find them online at ulagency.org. They're doing everything possible to connect people to jobs in the middle of a pandemic, which is not an easy task. No. But there's a lot of jobs in the trades. Let's go to line number 2 right now. Joining us, as he does each and every month, is Dave Wondolowski, Executive Secretary of the Cleveland Building and Construction Trades Council, a man of many hats. He's also on the election board, and we'll talk about that as well. Big Dave, how are we doing today? Welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Flash. I'm doing okay.
Good, good, good. Man, I'm seeing a lot of good stories about new buildings in the downtown Cleveland area. The Lumen building, Dave and I are talking off the air about how many, what was that, like 400 jobs that were created out of that project across from Playhouse Square, something like that?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was a great project for us.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful building. Beautiful. Great craftsmanship. And we have, let's see, the church plus state, church and state. Now, I thought there was a church down there. That's over by Ohio City. And what is that? It's the two streets intersecting there, church
yeah.
and state. Is that why they call it that?
Exactly. It's what they call the Hingetown area. And yes, projects on the corner of church and state. And that's why it's named that, which is a pretty iconic name. But yeah, that's that was another great project for us. Again, both projects were done and completed successfully on time and on budget, even in the middle of the pandemic. So very proud of the people that worked on both projects, probably about 200 or 250 jobs on church and state as well. And it was really monumental to complete those projects the way we did, despite the pandemic beginning back in mid March or at least hitting Ohio here in mid March, you know, very, it says a lot about the fortitude of the men and women that built those projects.
Amen. Yeah, it's amazing. And just wonderful architecture and, like I said, craftsmanship on both of those. Okay, one more question here. The next big project is the Sherwin-Williams headquarters. And where do we stand with that? Because I know that was approved by various governments, including the city and the state. What's the next step on that one, Dave?
So we'll be working with the construction manager, Gil Bain and Welty, and they're in partnership on that project, on a project labor agreement, and that job will be moving forward. They'll be breaking ground, I believe, first or second quarter of next year.
Good, 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 good.
So we're excited about that. We're also very much involved in the Justice Center project. I do attend those meetings. So we will be building a new jail, and there are ongoing discussions about building a new courthouse as well. So those projects will start soon and have to start soon. And we also have some other big apartment projects coming up in downtown, like City Club Apartments on Euclid. And so we're looking forward to some of these major projects taking place. I know the Cleveland Clinic has some stuff that's temporarily shelved, probably another $1 billion worth of work. So the outlook is still good, and we're very, very much optimistic about next year.
How are we doing with apprenticeship training? And if you can also speak to women in the trades, you probably know about the Trades Women Build Nations Conference. We've been promoting it here on America's Workforce for the last couple of weeks. It's going to be online this Saturday. In fact, we're going to have Doreen Cannon on the show this coming Friday to talk more about it. What's your perspective on that? Are we seeing more females getting involved in the trades now?
Yes, we sure are. And I'll tell you, Doreen's a real hero. I mean, she's out there volunteering her time along with the other women on her committee. This is a committee I put together back in, I believe it was 2014. And it's been nothing but a benefit to the building trades. But Doreen really does a great job of doing outreach to women and letting them know that there are real opportunities in the trades for a career with pension and health and welfare, and she's done just a fantastic job, her and her whole group of women. So it's great to see. I just got an email from the National Building Trades that they are going to start honoring women monthly as heroes of the trades, and certainly I plan to nominate some people here in Cleveland for that award, because we just really do have a great group of women here. And women have really been a huge benefit to the trades. They're good union members. They work hard, and I'm proud to represent them.
That's good. Well, you let me know about the people you're going to honor. We'll make sure we get them here on America's Workforce. Let's do that and support more women in the trades, and eventually they'll get honored as well. So that's a great thing. Great thing. All right, let's move on to the election. And I'm just like to get your perspective. It seems, I've said this on the show many times, Dave, ever since Bush Gore, it seems like we can't get elections right in this country. Every state is a little bit different. I know you've been working hard on this, and voting started already. What was it, last Tuesday? In fact, I got mine in the mail over the weekend. I'm dropping mine off today, probably to the elections board. Let's start right there. What's your perspective of how things are going? And what do we got, 20 days until November 3rd, which is actually the election day? What's your thoughts?
Sure. So we have seen a large influx of vote by mail applications. We've sent out over 300,000. At one point, we were registering about 20,000 applications per day. So we do know that vote by mail will be up. We do know that early in-person voting is also up. It's double what it has been since the polls opened, and on 10-6. So we were concerned and still are concerned about the collection of absentee ballots. I worked on a plan with my colleagues at the board to have multiple Dropbox sites, or not Dropbox sites, but multiple drop locations where we would have bipartisan teams of people. We thought that was going to fly, and the Secretary of State shut us down on that. which was astonishing to me because all you have to do is drive through the Euclid corridor there at 30th and Euclid and see the traffic and the chaotic situation that we have there. We're managing it well. It's not that we're not taking a lot of people, traffic direction and other scenarios, but to make sure and assure that, you know, we've got cars driving through parking lots, dropping off their ballots. We've also got pedestrians walking through to the board to vote. And so it's just been kind of a mess down there, but we're managing it and we have not had any major hiccups. Proud of the work that the Cuyahoga County Board of Elections has done. We've got a great staff there. The director, Tony Perlotti, and deputy director, Chantel Soder, are doing a fantastic job of administering a great election. I'm confident that we will get this done. We're seeing other problems in other areas with people getting wrong ballots mailed to them and other issues taking place. And that's not happening here in Cuyahoga County. But I am I'm still pushing for people to either vote early in person or to vote by mail. It's imperative that they do that. We don't want long lines on election day. We want to try to avoid that. We are expecting a 75% turnout in Cuyahoga County, and that's in also, it's good to know that out of 900,000 registered voters, you know, it's over a third of those voters have sent in or will vote by mail, which is really great. We know that another large number will vote early in person, so hopefully that will ease the lines on election day, and we can continue to administer this flawlessly, and that's my hopes. But it would really behoove anyone to again vote by mail or vote early in person.
You mentioned the drop boxes, and there's been a tug of war, a court battle going on to, I guess, in bigger counties like Cuyahoga County, to have more of them. In fact, they wanted to put some in various libraries. So that's still ongoing. We might see more drop boxes happening here, in your opinion,
no,
or what?
I doubt it. I think the ship has sailed on that. Well, first of all, it would be impossible for us to get new drop boxes at this point. They're not easy to get. It's a specific type of box, a secured box. And there'd have to be surveillance on that box, you know, camera surveillance, and it's just not going to be possible. That's why my plan at the Board of Elections involved bipartisan teams of people collecting those ballots, and I thought that was really going to be the answer. And it was different than the drop box scenario. But unfortunately, that's not going to work. And people just have to realize that, you know, no matter who you're voting for in this election, your voice needs to be heard. I mean, there's a lot happening right now. And, you know, a lot of people can question the handling of this pandemic and how this happened from the White House on down. And along with all of the dismantling that the Department of Labor has done, and, you know, they've made it harder to organize. And I don't really want to get into a big stump of who you should vote for, but you really need to look deep at the issues, not just look at the surface, because, you know, it's more than just, you know, sayings on baseball caps that make this country great, and really need to be out there and vote and have our voices heard.
You did a nice job on that. You did a real nice job. I appreciate what you just said there. Yeah, there's a lot of information. AFL-CIO.org. Just go, or if you're a union member right now, most of our audience union members, your local has a lot of information on who to vote for and where they stand on the issues concerning working men and women. We'll leave it on that note. Mr. Dave Wondolowski, Executive Secretary of the Cleveland Building and Construction Trades Council. You take care, be safe, and we'll talk to you next month, and we'll dissect everything we talked about today, okay? How's that sound?
That sounds good to me, Flash. Take care. I appreciate it.
You got it. Dave Wondolowski, Executive Secretary of the Cleveland Building and Construction Trades Council. You can find more at cbctc.org. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, latest from the nation, the North Coast Labor Federation, and the IBEW. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.